Okay, we're back. I feel like
we're not back from anything.
I know we're not back, but I'm saying we're back now because it's been a while since we've had a show, right?
Yeah, we look.
We took Thanksgiving weekend off. We neglected to mention that to anyone, but we
How was everyone's Thanksgiving?
Oh, that's a good question. Mine was all right. You know, yeah. Upper West Side Thanksgiving, pretty low key, pretty easy. Didn't have to travel anywhere other than Manhattan. But how about you guys?
I went to Jackson Heights for a very lovely Thanksgiving of art people, and I made Appalachian fried apples for a bunch of very cool art people, and we watched RuPaul's Drag Race, and it was very nice. I brought Appalachia to Queens and Queens.
What are fried apples?
Slice them up and saute them in pork fat with like cinnamon and sugar.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, because classic, you know, applesauce and pork. Mm-hmm. You know how good that is together. So,
yeah, I had a lovely Thanksgiving.
Felix.
Well, you know, like Thanksgiving is, they say the world is a stage, and if the world is a stage, then Thanksgiving is the Globe Theater. Because Thanksgiving, we all have to play roles. Being that most of my uncles, except for one, are very woke, and you know, the non-woke uncle was not at Thanksgiving this year. I was the racist uncle, and there are a lot of guides to arguing with people like me, and so you know,
it's very noble of you to step up like that.
Yeah, dude, someone's got to do it. Do you think I want to like spend Thanksgiving talking about hip hop quarterbacks and pulling up pants? No, I don't. But I'm an adult, and so you know. Got kicked out of that Thanksgiving, so I took the early flight back and actually had a lovely Thanksgiving also on the Upper West Side with my friend Jared Kushner.
And finally, Matt, how was your Thanksgiving?
Fine. Spent it with the old in-laws. I got drunk, but didn't piss myself or hit on my mother-in-law, so it worked out fine.
All right, then.
Okay. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps this petty pace from Turkey Day to Christmas Day, and then we start all again next year. I'm glad that we're leading with Thanksgiving, because I do want to read now, just very quickly, a description of what we, or the typical Chapo Trap House listener, does on Thanksgiving. It says here... they go downstairs at Thanksgiving, briefly mumble hi. Everyone asks him how community college is going. He mumbles something about a 2.0 average, goes back upstairs with a loaf of bread and some peanut butter, and gets back to gaming and masturbating.
Yeah, okay, look, I've...
Felix, I'm sorry, this was your description of the what a fail son is, a.k.a. the average Chapo Trap House listener. This is what you told Gia in our New Yorker profile, and this quote has taken on something a life of its own.
Well, look, I first of all want to say that, yes, I realize that 90% of attacks on the show are directly because of things that I have said. Am I learning? No. Am I growing as a person? No. Am I realizing that my actions and words affect the people around me? No, not at all. But, look, that's the truth. And if you don't think that there's some truth in stereotypes, good luck, buddy. And also, I didn't even say it's a bad thing. You know who was a virgin at 20 and, you know, got yelled at Thanksgiving because he was masturbating too loudly and the bed was creaking because, you know...
Boy, this took a hard left turn.
Bed technology was squeaker in these days. A little kid named Albert Einstein. So, just like not being able to talk and still breastfeeding when you're 7, like, it usually shows great signs of intelligence. So... Yeah, that's our listeners, but yeah. I'm proud of you guys. I'm proud of them.
Well, Felix is responsible for 90% of our controversial statements. But as you said, 25% of all the love.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
A hard 25% of the things that people like about the show. Well, now closer to like, you know, what's
100
divided by 6.
Closer to 10%.
Gentlemen's
10%. Yeah, a gentleman's 10.
Yeah, but like, so what? Like, it takes a lot of hands to build the world.
Now, of course, I bring up the fail son description and Thanksgiving because I think the theme for this week's show is I am thankful for all our haters. I'm more thankful for our haters than anything else in this world. Like I said, the last show we did was before Thanksgiving, and you know, we took the weekend off. Maybe it was premature. I don't know. But it just seems like, who are some of the main people like we've made fun of on this show since we started back in March?
Like types of people, like,
well, like, okay, I'm thinking specifically
skull shapes.
Well, I would, like, as far as types of people, I was just gonna be like all mothers,
single moms,
firefighters, special needs firefighters,
people who own pit bulls,
people with tattoos, but no,
my cat's about to eat the pizza.
By the way, for listeners at home, we're in the midst of a podcast pet summit. Ernest and Mickey are in the same room right now, and there's an uneasy truce.
Yeah, tensions are high.
tensions are high here in the Park Slope Mansion.
Also, I think he's like three times her weight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ernest is a big boy. Yeah. Mickey is a petite
lady.
He's
my beautiful, large son.
Like I said, it's quiet for the moment, but controversy is brewing. And controversy about us and the show. Because like I said, okay, so we've made fun of a lot of people over the course of this show, and it seemed like just last week, all of them decided to take shots back at us at the same time, just one after the other. And it was sort of like, if you can remember the pool hall scene in Out for Justice, where dudes just attack Seagal one at a time. It was like that, except there was no Seagal, and they were just tripping over pool balls and like braining their head on the side of a table.
I have to say, I missed all of this too because I've been deactivated, trying to train my terrible cat.
You deactivated for self care.
I deactivated because I'm extremely ADD, and I just had a bunch of work to do for the end of the year, and I was like, oh, well, you know, there's a profile of us in New Yorker. It's like, you know, I don't really have to pay attention to the press anymore for, you know, it's like, oh, and on a good note, take some time off, get some work done. And then I'm getting texts like on Thanksgiving about someone being mad at me. Like, aren't you people drunk by now?
First of all, are you okay?
I did get some people yelling at me on Thanksgiving. But that was
mainly for racism.
Mainly for racism. But I mean, like, on Twitter, that was also for racism. But show-related racism. And it was like, I guess haters don't take two hard and fast rules. Hoes don't get cold, and haters don't take vacation.
That's true. Yeah, no. I was like, oh, well, are they saying terrible things about me? And my informants were like, no, you don't exist in this conversation yet again. Yeah, all right, then I don't care.
Yeah, there was a good deal of erasure going on.
Dude, Amber could wear the sandwich board from Die
Silenced,
Hard 3.
Silenced, marginalized, and erased. Yeah.
They would be like, Felix did that.
I mean, okay, so there's three actual articles that were written about us in this whirlwind of controversy that I would like to highlight on the show. If you cut the trap, do we not bleed? We are all sweeties. That's the thing, you know. Like even though we're 100% not bothered by any of this, and it's actually funny.
I was actually like extremely not. I was doing, you know, my Thanksgiving custom is I pretend to. It's sort of like being at work. Like I pretend to take a shit for an hour.
Like, got a shit on company time, man.
Screw around on my phone till my legs fall asleep on the toilet. But no, I've had people calling me a piece of shit on the internet like literally since I was 12. Was this my fault? Yes. But no, it's just like I've been doing it for a long time.
I don't think any, or maybe they do, but like I don't think people do that to me because like they don't want to do it, maybe because I'm a woman or because I mean, I am actually like a Marxist feminist. Like my tradition is feminism, and I do have, I am from like an anti-racist feminist like socialist organization. But I was just used to, you know, like right wingers being terrible. But I don't know. I turned on the toggle. I can't see most people that tweet at me.
I did remember the one I liked the most. It was a guy who was saying that if we were really serious about being good leftists in the 21st century, we would amplify women's voices instead of having our own be amplified. And basically it boiled down to, Like, if we wanted to be good activists, we would literally do nothing. Like, because he wasn't saying, like, we should have women on the show. He was saying, we shouldn't have a show, and some hypothetical women should have the show instead.
Well, then why is he tweeting?
I don't know how the mechanism of that was supposed to work. Like, were we supposed to get the show going and have people like it and be like, okay, everybody, we're gone now.
Yeah. He kind of has a point. I know that I do this a lot. I haven't disclosed this to you guys. I am stealing the bandwidth that this show goes up on from a woman. The woman's bandwidth we're using, she literally cannot have a podcast because I'm siphoning it. So yeah, this is like some apt criticism there, but on
I wish I kind of had seen it, but I was just too fucking busy because I figured maybe I got some of my favorite kind of criticism when they try and own me by saying I'm hot. Which is like the best, the own. It's like they're like, you know, when your beauty fades, and I'm like, all right, okay.
They're like, let's see how much your socialist values hold up when you're only a 9.
It's great, yeah. I usually get a lot of those if I ever like pay attention to it. I might have missed some like serious. What's the reverse of a neg?
A pause.
A pause.
Yeah, you were a pause pig. You were
a pause my boy hole.
Yeah. Bug chaser Amber. I do get that from libs sometimes too. Oh yeah,
you get it too. When they're like, "No, you're so handsome. Yeah, you're an asshole. This handsome. Yeah, this one
guy was like, "Oh yeah, you think you're making a really good point putting your fucking muscles right in your profile picture? Oh, you think you look really hot for the babes, huh? With your why don't you let me suck your dick, you faggot?" It's just always that.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of weird repressed sexual anger.
Mm. Well, so other people who are channel repressed sexual anger is apparently this show. And at least via one criticism, I want to begin with probably the most substantial criticism of the show, or at least the one that I think does actually warrant some kind of response. And I'm referring to Rebecca Traister's piece in New York Mag's The Cut, titled "Blaming Clinton's Base for Her Loss is the Ultimate Insult." Mm. Now, I know we've never talked about Rebecca Traister on the show before, but she is certainly indicative of a type that we've made fun of relentlessly, which is the kind of like clueless, like white liberal feminist Hillary booster.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So like I think maybe she read certain things in the New Yorker piece and, you know, caught on to the fact that we were making fun of her and people or people like her. Right.
Rebecca Tainstar. the other big article she wrote this year was about how she used to think Hillary was like Darth Vader, but she's actually like Princess Leia. So it's like we are, like when somebody like that criticizes you, you do have to listen. Even if you don't agree with what they have to say, you do have to be like
but,
this.
Yeah, but like because of the New Yorker profile now, more so than ever, like the same like sort of liberal pundits that we make fun of, it's sort of like they can't ignore the fact that we're making fun of them anymore. And the tell is, of course, in the headline. Blaming Clinton's base for her loss is the ultimate insult. And what Rebecca does in this article... Yeah,
this
go ahead.
This is the thing. I would say Traister, in terms of like feminist circles, like I had always considered her sort of the best of my enemies in terms of like she's one of the smarter liberals. Like I don't think she's like a Marcotte. She's not just like a insane, you know, loyalist...
She's like just a pure Hillary booster.
Yeah, I think she's an intelligent person, but I do think a lot of smart people who I don't agree with politically, you know, but that are liberals, lost their fucking minds at the end of this election. And this whole idea of like, okay, I didn't read it, but I'm going to talk about it anyway because, you know, we're amplifying women's voices right now.
Don't read. Go off, bitch.
But, like, the idea of, like, the ultimate insult is like, well, why do you care if people insult you?
Well, no, she's saying the ultimate insult is to Clinton's base.
Yeah. And, well, who cares?
Well, she's saying Clinton's base is, you know, women, people of color, grandmothers, activists, and that is just to say,
everyone
that
has
up.
Grandmothers, and like, you know, every base has grandmothers and women involved. I mean, like, you know,
No. The base is implicitly they're POC. They're the good poor people.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
The virtuous
yeah.
poor people.
Although
the POC, Black Lives Matter, because we know how much Hillary Clinton's campaigned on Black Lives Matter and how much she embraced that movement. And we all know that they were there on stage at the Javits Center, right? You remember that? When there were all those Black Lives Matter people on the stage when John Podesta stumbled out to tell them that they'd eaten shit?
Well, I mean, like, what Rebecca does in this article is equate herself and basically Hillary's inner circle with Hillary's base and make it seem like we are, by making fun of her and the Podestas and the Hillary Clintons of the world, we're making fun of the people who are, you know, her base of support.
Well, because that's what they do.
Right.
That's what they do, is they collapse the support for a politician with an identity. And so they're like, you're making fun of us. And it's like, well, I'm making fun of you personally because you're a silly liberal media feminist. But I don't actually think of constituencies as like some sort of concrete political, you know, base, especially when you consider how low voter turnout even is in this country.
Yeah. And I mean, Amber brings up a great point that you can't just say that the 60 million people who voted for Hillary, that's who we were making fun of, and that they're all women of color. All the 60 million people who voted for Hillary are Black Lives Matter activists and women.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make sense numbers wise. But second of all, it's, you know, this is a very, like, very 2016 liberal tactic that you cushion something as a defense of a group of people, but really you're just turning them into a human shield by turning any criticism of yourself into a criticism of this type of person that you think you're in lockstep with policy-wise and morality-wise, and you're just as righteous as them, and turn it around. You are not just using them as a shield, like putting your fucking baby in your avatar.
Well, I mean, and I don't think any of us like ever like held Hillary voters responsible for any of that. It's just, you know, no one saw what was coming, and everyone was doing the best they can, and I think people were trying to vote pragmatically. We were all a little put off by, like, you know, like this really serious kind of idolatry and the sort of disgusting unctuous like media worship, and Hillary herself we found to be an abhorrent candidate. But, you know, most people are voting pragmatically. And of course they voted for Hillary Clinton. They're going team blue, you know?
I would have probably voted for Hillary if I lived in, like, fucking Ohio, because I think it's, like, I think most shit about her sucks. But as we can see, the Trump outcome is, like, all the shit that sucks about her and worse. But
now you say it, Felix.
I mean, I did literally raise money for Trump before. But that's the other thing. That is sort of like a hidden offensive thing about it, is she's taking these groups of people and being like, Black Lives Matter loves Hillary.
She's putting
her bullshit enthusiasm.
You're insulting the troops.
Exactly. These are liberal troops.
Yeah, this is the liberal troops.
The troops,
right?
Yeah.
I want to get into
first responders.
I want to get into the actual specifics of what she does in this article. Like, she introduces it. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but she introduces it by telling these horror stories of, like, what Donald Trump represents and now all of these ghouls that are going to be in his cabinet and how, like, racist and sexist they are. Then she talks a lot about the Mark Lilla column in the New York Times, where he was the end of identity.
Noted leftist Mark Lilla.
Yeah, no, this guy's another
leftist firebrand Mark Lilla, who's a fucking just crusty old reactionary tenured shithead who's basically pissed because he can't hit on the fucking grad students anymore. I mean, the only thing I know about this guy is when he had, like, an absolutely idiotic review of Corey Robbins' book, Reactionary Mind.
Oh, right.
That's the only thing I ever saw him, where his whole premise was, you know, you're being too mean to the intellectual traditions of the right wing. Yeah, this guy is a fucking leftist flag bearer.
What she does is she goes straight from Mark Lilla into yours truly, Chapo Trap House. Well, you see the move there?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Easy to connect the two because we've also made fun of identity politics. I don't think we've actually ever mentioned, I don't know.
I actually thought that the last show we did with T was great timing. We already had booked him. It was not like it was a response, but it flew in the face of like every point in this article.
I mean, there is another sort of obscuring of the truth there, and it's something I've seen since the second that we knew Hillary was going to lose, and that is obscuring the type of campaign she ran. By running this sort of false dichotomy that you can either run Clinton identity politics campaigns or Sanders class only campaigns, which are neither of what those campaigns were, you set up this false debate. But like, do you think Hillary lost because she did identity politics, or do you think she lost because she spent pretty much half the general election trying to win moderate GOP women who just never came out for her?
Well,
she didn't even run that fucking campaign.
No,
that they're saying
she lost because of identity politics, but people think she lost because she thought identity politics was enough for her to pull a kind of base.
Exactly. But she
barely even made gestures.
I'm with her.
Beyond like a feminist outrage at Trump's awful crudeness, she didn't even really have like a coherent identity-based appeal. All the appeal was to moderate Republicans.
No, but there was a light touch there. I disagree. There was a light touch. The very slogan, I'm with her, was, I think, a pretty transparent kind of like, well, it's a woman's turn now.
Well, I mean, it was like all the stuff, anything that you could even say was close to any politics that she did was completely superficial thing like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it was, I'm with her.
It was like the identity
Beyonce.
Was her.
She's like, well, I'm pro me and I'm a woman, so I must be pro women.
Yeah, you could say on her website, as we talked about, she talked about, you know, equal pay and family leave. Did she talk about that shit on the stump? Did she talk about that shit on the debates? Did she talk about that shit in her ads? No, she did not.
No, she did not.
She talked about how mean Donald Trump was. And the thing to
100%.
And the thing where Rebecca is writing, oh, well, you're besmirching the Black Lives Matter activists that voted for her. Hillary may have won if just maybe 85% of the black people that voted for Obama had voted for her across the Rust Belt. She would be president now. But I guess your identity politics candidate wasn't that good at it because they just fucking flat out didn't fucking vote.
I want to actually read from the Rebecca's article. This is where she gets into us. She says,
Amber is referenced.
Funny that you bring that
woman
up.
I'm
going to read this here. She says, it is clear that this is what Sanders hears when someone describes a desire to overcome. She's talking about Sanders' comment about how you need to say, you can't just be like, I'm a Latino woman, vote for me. You need something more than that, which is, again,
offensive.
A completely reasonable and 100% correct thing to say.
First of all, Sanders should have said Latinx. second of all.
No, she said, this is clear what Sanders hears when someone describes a desire to overcome representational inequality in politics, an infantile, politically unsophisticated, feather-brained appeal to narcissistic self-advancement. Which brings us to this week's most diverting assault on the Clinton base, a New Yorker profile by Gia Tolentino of the men and woman behind Chapo Trap House.
I'm the woman.
You are name checked in Gia's piece, though.
Yeah.
There's like at least a paragraph about you.
I had only been on. Yeah. And also, it was kind of significant because
the term.
Yeah.
They coined dirtbag left.
Yeah. And also, like, the addition of two people, one of which isn't white and one of which is a woman, like, that's not insignificant.
And that is the first and last time you make an appearance in this piece.
Yeah, that's it. It says, the man and woman behind Chapo Trap House, a popular leftist political podcast unofficially led by Will Menaker, the son of a former publishing executive and New Yorker editor.
They love that.
Ooh, they love that, don't they?
This time I thought you were a Horatio Alger character.
William F. Buckley Jr. over here.
All right, she says, blah, 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 She just basically, like, this whole fucking thing is she just read the New Yorker article and responded to it. She says, the story was funny and punishing, itself a New Yorker cartoon, bringing to vivid life some of the worst suspicions.
Okay, you said funny and then you said New Yorker cartoon. So you've already lost. It also wasn't particularly punishing. I think she had ambivalent feelings about the show, which is also fine. I think, like, the best criticism of it was, like, you know, someone who had never heard of the podcast might come away getting the impression that, like, you know, it is actually racist or sexist or something. But honestly, I do think you would have to be kind of a dense asshole to, like, literally.
I agree with Amber. I mean, like, if...
I mean, these are not our readership or our listenership anyway.
Right. I don't really care if, like, a group of New Yorker readers who would never listen to the show in the first place, like, thinks it's something it's not.
We don't spoon feed you things, but I mean, for fuck's sake.
The question that the show is like a New Yorker cartoon, one thing that they
How
don't
dare you.
One yeah. thing that this That's one thing that they, again that they, n- nobody in the lying disgusting media will bring up is that Gia did interview us on a desert island. I was in a therapist couch talking to a dog.
Yeah.
She says it brought to vivid life some of the worst suspicions anyone has ever harbored about the young, well-heeled Hillary haters who proclaim themselves the true left. Yeah,
they're laughing in a living room.
And now
together.
You talk about how people it's easy to misinterpret. I mean, one really fucking dense person who took everything literally is Rebecca Traister.
Yeah.
And she gets into Felix's description about the guy coming down for Thanksgiving dinner to go back to, like, gaming and masturbating. She took that at 100% face value. And then she describes...
Yeah, but that was on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's an ungenerous reader intentionally.
And then she describes... In the piece's most startling example of self-reflexive commentary, Biederman said of Clinton's election night celebration turned funeral at the Javits Center. This goes into your thing where you called her an entitled fucking slob.
Yeah.
This fucking asshole brought all her donors to have a big party about how great they were. She's never been a fucking leader ever in her life. She just has these fans who are psychologically weak, tormented, elite freaks.
All right.
That was That was pretty harsh, Felix, but I thought it was funny.
I stand by it.
I completely stand by it. And
also, why do you fucking care if someone is fucking criticizing in harsh terms someone who, you know, is trying to be a leader of the free world?
Yeah,
they should be able to take it.
Yeah.
Which is it? Is she a tough leader?
Or is everyone unfair to her? I mean, like...
Amber, here's how she squares this circle. Right after that, she says... The peanut butter gobblers are keen to unleash their righteous rightness, their furious convictions on the Javits Center crowd, the wealthy donors, sure, but also mothers of the movement, the reproductive rights and women's leaders, the thousands of supporters who had canvassed and phone banked and gotten out the vote and driven souls to the polls. It could almost be Trump supporters talking.
Well, they didn't drive enough souls, did they?
Yeah, it looks like not enough people wanted to go.
How many phone bankers were at the fucking Javits Center? I need to get this information. Because it seems like she's just pulling that out of her ass.
No, she is.
Wouldn't that be entirely filled with, like, donors and even the staff are going to be, like, the creepy fucking Veep extras? It's not going to be, like, salt-of-the-earth phone bankers from Bethesda.
Right, no,
you were fucking making fun of Hillary Clinton and her unctuous fucking tribe.
Yeah, I mean Rebecca does get right is that I am talking about her. Rebecca Traister,
Rebecca Traister,
the type of mentally tormented, weak, entitled freak who can ignore that Hillary Clinton ran a white identity politics campaign 8 fucking years ago and now pretends not to be racist.
But wait, I'm sorry, I have to bring this up. Speaking of, you know, Hillary's sort of attempt to pander through what I do think was, like, the most superficial kind of identity politics, you know, dabbing Gun Allen shit.
Right, right.
So, Rebecca Traister, I got a galley of her book for review at one point. Called All the Single Ladies.
Yep.
Oh, wow. In Africa, they call her Sister
Holy
Rebecca.
Holy fuck, are you fucking kidding me? That's the name of the fucking book?
Yes,
yes.
Are you
yes.
fucking kidding me?
I shouldn't have told you that, Matt. I'm worried about your health
right now. What is Rebecca's...
Are you fucking kidding me?
What is Rebecca's bio?
She has no idea.
Fucking Christ.
What a dumb, out-of-touch cracker she sounds like, and that's why
well,
she's
Well, the funny part about that is that the thesis of the book is that, like, the single women voting bloc is, like, the new powerful, like, demographic to be courted. And then, Hillary will, like, channel this new phenomenon in American society of women who are single and confident and happy to, like, be on their own.
I know a lot of single women. Most of them are fucking in poverty. Yeah.
Guess what group actually did not turn out for Hillary at anywhere near the rate they did for Obama this past election?
No, because those bitches had to be at work or they were tired.
It was young single women.
It looks like Rebecca has to give her advance back. These are the rules. The opposite thing that she thought would happen happened.
She has to apologize to Beyonce in person.
She's doing misogynoir. Like, she's taking Beyonce's stuff and making a bad book about it, and then making Beyonce, Queen Bey, look foolish.
Well, look, I mean, like, so we established that what she's doing here is that we're obviously making fun of her and Hillary Clinton and her rotten campaign and the people who are, like, you know, the elite of her support, right? And what Rebecca's doing is this, like, you know, sleight of hand where she's shuffling in, like, you know, reproductive rights activists and union workers and making it seem like by making fun of Hillary, we are attacking the most vulnerable members of the Democratic coalition. But I want to get now
to
the...
making fun of you, personally.
We're not making fun of the people that Hillary fucking failed.
Rebecca Ann Traister. I don't know your middle name. I'm guessing it's Ann.
I want to get to actually the... Right. This is the worst paragraph in the article. She writes, "The objects of the vitriol from the left, dirtbag and otherwise, are the hardworking heart of the Democratic Party, now the resistance, the grandmothers who left their houses every morning to get out the vote, the people who took buses and carloads of volunteers to knock on doors, the ring buzzers who made endless phone calls, the Black Lives Matter activists who protest
who Hillary
the killing
kicked out of her fundraisers. Wait, what?
Who Bill, like, fucking went... fucking crazy. He said
Bill told all the people that Bill told to pull their pants up.
Who protest the killing of their children and the targeting of their communities. The women and men who provide reproductive health access, even the government works to roll back that access.
This is troops bullshit.
The abortion rights and gay rights and criminal justice reform advocates who didn't write off Hillary Clinton but instead asked her to be better. Okay, like that's that's a slander of Black Lives Matter because as far as I know, they never embraced the Clinton campaign, or maybe some people did. Well, but like, did they ever officially?
It wasn't a unified thing, and like a lot of them were extremely
rightly
critical.
Very skeptical of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, actually, remember when those two activists confronted her and she like froze? Yeah. She froze up.
Why
completely?
Don't you run for something?
Yeah,
yeah. No, literally, the activists confronted her about the super predators comment, about the 94 crime bill. About a litany of other awful things that Hillary has done, you know, before Hillary even put fucking Michael Stop and Frisk Bloomberg on stage at her convention. And Hillary, because she has no idea how to talk to anyone who isn't John McCain, but also isn't genuflecting to her, goes, "Why don't you run for something and change it?
Why don't you give me millions of dollars out of the
Why don't you, hey, why doesn't your campaign stop sucking up money from down ticket races? Good work."
I was going to say, that pretty much sums up Rebecca's article. However, there were some corrections in it. She did attribute a quote that Felix said to myself. Thankfully, New York Magazine corrected that. But my favorite correction on the piece is at the bottom. It says, "An earlier version of this column incorrectly referred to Ricky Ray Rector as mentally ill. He had cognitive disabilities, not a mental illness."
Whoops.
That's actually a pretty big...
Yeah, it's a pretty big error.
Just to wrap this up, going back to Thanksgiving... seeing my parents on Thanksgiving, my mom did lovingly call me a dirtbag, but she did bring up, she was like, "Now I did read the New York Magazine piece," and my mom was just like, "You know, Rebecca Traister, you know, he's a writer I normally I really like and respect. Why didn't she just give you guys a call? Like, why didn't she get a comment from you? Why didn't she listen to the show?" And I was like, "Oh, mom, I love you. I love you." Okay, fuck. We've done way too much on Traster. Let's move along to we've ate our vegetables now. Let's have dessert.
Yes.
Let's eat something sweet. Who else have we made fun of on the show? The Federalist.
Ooh.
Federalist Magazine, my favorite read. Some people go straight for Arts and Leisure. I go straight for the fetus section.
I mean, the show was inspired by the Federalist podcast.
Yeah,
well,
that's true. Yeah, we're doing this show because we listened to the Federalist podcast and we were like, dude, we can do this. We got, again, this New Yorker profile is the one that keeps on giving. We finally got
written
up
the
Federalist.
This is the one that doesn't mention me at all, right?
Yeah, they don't mention... Yeah.
Okay, I skimmed it really quickly and I was like, I don't care.
The headline is, Meet the Intolerant Vulgarians of the Dirtbag Left. This article is by John Daniel Davidson, who sounds like a presidential assassin. And the subhead is, in the wake of Donald Trump's victory, some on the political left are lashing out, loudly proclaiming how intolerant and illiberal they really are. Now, the thing about this article is that when it comes to these, like, moving on from, like, the liberal pundits into these, like, right-wing welfare cases at institutions like the Federalist, these people are basically so used to tilting at the liberal pundits we just got done making fun of, that they literally have no response to someone who doesn't actually value tolerance and civility as chief political virtues. To put it another way, John Daniel Davison, you got fat while everybody in the street starved. This piece isn't that good. It's not that funny. I just want to read the first couple graphs. Okay, so he's going straight at... This is the Federalist going straight at Chapo Trap House. I'm like, oh boy. I'm opening this piece. Better see how hard we're going to get roasted. Ready for this? Nearly 20 years ago, Radiohead released Karma Police, the second single on their groundbreaking album, OK Computer. The song is an anthem for an illiberal age. It opens with a demand. Karma Police, arrest this man. And the refrain sounds a warning. This is what you'll get when you mess with us. Given his left-wing politics, Thom Yorke no doubt feared conformity of thought and suppression of speech and dissent would come from the political right and from the homogenizing effects of capitalism and consumer culture. He was right that we are entering an era of intolerance, but wrong to think it would come from conservatives. Our illiberal moment and the popular culture that creates and sustains it is almost wholly a creation of the left. I just like that because he's like, time to tee this one up and own them with their own pop culture tastes.
From how many years ago?
20 years ago, the song Karma Police came out on the groundbreaking album OK Computer.
That's an incredibly literal reading of a Radiohead song, by the way.
I
want to know how he feels about fake plastic trees.
Fake plastic trees is about the war on Christmas.
So he spends two-thirds of this article discussing Radiohead and the Mike Pence Hamilton incident.
Defining incidents of the last 30 years.
And then he finally gets to us. And he says, they're as foul-mouthed as they please, even when they're being interviewed by the New Yorker.
Oh, hell yeah, buddy. We love swears. Can't get enough swears.
But he says, but the vulgarity isn't just for entertainment. It's also a way of being honest, telling it like it really is. Many on the left called Trump a short-fingered vulgarian for doing the exact same thing. He wasn't afraid of offending, but it's the dirtbag left's honesty that's so instructive. These guys want you to know what they really think. Again, there's no defense from the truth. And the truth is that the Federalist is just a damn good...
This is a pause.
Yeah.
This is another,
what's his actual burn here?
His point is that, you liberals claim that you want to have an open debate, but you've already made up your minds and you want to force us to do what you want, which is literally the entirety of fucking politics. The idea that anybody on the right is like still making up their mind and wants to have an open debate and doesn't want to force their fucking views on their opponent is insane bullshit. Everybody knows that. I mean, how about it's when Mike Pence is electrocuting the nuts of gay teenagers in Indiana, was he really like, well, you know, I gotta... I gotta get a lot of opposing views on this, and we have to have a discussion and a frank exchange of ideas before we settle on a policy. None of them, no, they've never done that, and they never would, because that's not how it works. If you have a political ideology, you try to fucking pursue it, regardless of what side it is. These norms are just things that we sort of pretend to agree on so that we can, you know, negotiate the public square. They're not what we actually give a shit about. We care about the fucking ends. And the only reason that anybody fucking pretends even to care about these, like, procedural stuff and these frank and open debates is because we have valorized the sort of mush-headed anti-ideology that, like, the average swing voter is supposed to have, where they have, like, a bunch of contradictory, unformed political ideas, and they just kind of, like, bounce around from one to the other, and they never really even... And they pride themselves on not having a consistent belief system. Well, okay, but if you do, then of course you're not fucking looking for input from some dickhead from the Federalist.
Sorry, I'm just looking at one line here. This leads, like, a new paragraph. It says, referring to us, it says... Now they're not interested in soul-searching about how to forge a post-identity liberalism that focuses on more how to help white people in the Rust Belt and reach out to religious voters. Tell that to Rebecca Traister, John Daniel Davison.
Yeah, it's like, what is he even saying now? Like, that's all anybody has been talking about is how to create, like, a broad populist appeal.
Here's another funny...
Although, fuck religious voters, who gives a shit? Fuck you.
I only want Shia voters. It's the only religious voters
another funny
You've
part.
You've got a fucking... You have a gilded, vulgarian, the least Christian man to ever hold office as president on your
That's
behalf
interesting
right now.
Too.
Don't fucking talk to me about religious voters.
Literally Caligula.
Because people are like, you know, well, you know, we'll never be able to, you know, push through a certain type of backward religious fundamentalism in this country. It's like, yeah, apparently we can. Apparently we can.
Guess what? It seems to me that if the Christian voters, the people that we were talking about, if they really read their Bible, they might be voting for a certain type of guy who I'm talking about, a Jewish socialist who is what Jesus Christ was. Thank you.
Just one last thing on the
Donald Trump is going to unveil a golden calf in the room. Assholes aren't going to say shit.
It's going to be gold.
Fuck off,
beautiful.
Your religious voters. Because they said it explicitly. The interviews with evangelical leaders during the run up to the election are so revealing. They all they would admit that Trump is not a godly man, but they kept saying he's strong. He'll fight for us. He will exert authority on our behalf. Not foster a national debate, ram shit down people's throats because he has power and we're going to be beneficiaries of it. That's what politics is, you fucking weak bladdered piece of shit, baby lying, Radiohead listening to fucking poser bitch.
By the way, this guy does look like a sort of right wing hipster.
Yeah.
He's got like sort of horn. He's got like this sort of horn rim.
Oh, wait, no, I did see that guy. Yeah. That guy
got, like,
is.
A little bit of the fashion.
That guy is like. Yeah. Brendan, you can cut this, but he looks like if Luke O'Neill lived in the Matrix. Whoops.
Leave it in. Yeah. Leave it in.
Okay.
It's premium.
It's premium. That's a good joke.
Just the one last thing about the Federalist article is that, like, the sort of image that they used as the header for the piece is not us or, like, anything associated with the show, but just this sort of, like, stock photo
of
this,
like,
chick at
a
protest. Oh, yeah, this girl at a protest just with two middle fingers in the air, and there's, like, a fuck Trump sign behind her. And when the Federalists,
she's awesome.
Actually,
I love that chick.
Yeah, she's cool. Yeah, she's cool.
And when
they're like, look at these people, like, and everyone's seeing that yet again. It's just this huge, like, they're so disconnected from normal fucking people. They think you would see, like, a pretty girl with a fuck Trump sign holding up the double bird and be like, isn't this horrible? Like, no. No.
Well, Amber, the joke is...
Do you ever leave Manhattan? Do you ever leave D.C.?
The joke is, though, when the Federalist actually, like, tweeted out the link to this article, like, you know, like, on Twitter, it caps the header. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you click on it, and then all of the people that follow the Federalist that responded to it thought the article was about this brunette girl.
Yeah. They were all really disappointed. Yeah, yeah.
They were like, I can't believe this girl. She looks so smug and arrogant. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't you know we don't let women on the show? Okay, so the last article I want to bring up from our hurricane of controversy is, again, this is so perfect. Rod Dreher even wrote about us. Rod Dreher, recurring character on the show. We've made fun of him numerous times.
And I'm looking at the picture.
And he used Pajama Boy to illustrate.
Well, we got Radiohead. We got Pajama Boy. By the way, where's the beef next?
Like, by the way, I'm willing to just say this as the official Chapo statement. Radiohead sucks.
Radiohead's garbage.
It's like music for depressed people.
Yeah, Radiohead.
Though historically speaking, music for depressed people has been excellent music.
Nah, not really. I mean, Kevin Gates, not for people with depression. Gucci Mane, not for people
Mafia
with depression. Just, Freddie Gibbs, not for people with depression.
We get it. No, Radiohead's good. Who cares?
I like Radiohead. Thank you, Amber. Okay. I was feeling
the two musicians.
Oh, funny how that works.
The guy from Radiohead sounds like he's getting into a bath that's too hot all the time.
That's what I like.
Listen to the Les Mis soundtrack for the next hour.
What is
oh,
this?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. What an insult. You want me to listen to a great musical about love, loss, the pursuit of freedom in revolution? Missionary France, Belgian, Atlanta. We see each other playing. Yeah, that shit rules. And you know what? Fucking Philip Quast, when he sings his fucking Javert, at least he can turn his fucking vocals up to show some real motherfucking emotion, unlike Tom York. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You know,
musical straight as hell. Bitch.
Do you hear the dirtbag laugh singing the vulgar song?
Do you hear Sister Hillary?
So, Rod, there's not much here because this is like a typical Rod Dreher post in that he just like block quotes like 3,000 word like just and respond. He block quotes.
That trick. He blocked
mid millennium blogging.
Yeah,
hours.
And he like and then he reprints emails from like his equally hysterical fans that are like 3,000 words long. But basically, I want to bring this full circle is because Rod, exactly like Rebecca Traister, took Felix's description of our failsome listenership 100% literally, and it cut him into his soul because seriously, he wasn't familiar with the phrase failsome, and it's like I can tell it's like damaged his soul because he thinks it like perfectly encapsulates what he calls in the headline Weimar America. Yeah. Fail Sons of Weimar America, which I think actually could be a band name. And like he just goes on and on. I mean, like there's not many interesting things to read here. He's just talking about how, you know, unmoored we are from tradition and that like Fail Sons are just reaping the whirlwind of, you know, this horrible secular culture.
Marxist tradition is a tradition. I'm very traditional in some ways.
The one thing I want to highlight though is at the end he brings up Richard Spencer. And he says, I watched the entire speech Richard Spencer gave at his recent white supremacist conference, and I thought, what a beer hall putz.
I think Richard, you gonna take that, dude?
He says, I think the media are blowing him and his movement entirely out of proportion. Still, attention must be paid. In his speech, Spencer said some true and important things.
The worst position you could possibly take.
He says, but they are all entwined with false, malicious, and evil things. Rod, could you just delineate for me the different, like, what was false, evil, and malicious, but what was true and important about anything Richard Spencer said when he was literally heiling Hitler in a room full of people?
Maybe he liked the haircut.
Yeah, I guess he liked the haircut. I guess the thing I want to say about Rod is that I went to Rod's blog because someone told me he was writing about the show. But whenever you visit Rod's blog looking for one thing, you always find something else that's so much cooler. And I did find another article where he's going on about Weimar Germany, and he explicitly blames post-war Germany's embrace of homosexuality and transgenderism.
That
for the rise of Hitler.
My man Rod.
Not like those people actually died in the Holocaust.
Like, God does
it's like
it again.
It's not because I didn't join the Freikorps because I watched my entire graduating class get turned into fucking hamburger on the Somme. It was because I saw a dude in a negligee at a nightclub.
It was cabaret.
That's why I decided to crack skulls in the streets and support Hitler.
But Will, didn't you leave a message?
Yeah, I left a comment on Rod's article about my fail son Cody, and about how he listens to Chapo and is off that gas all day. And then my daughters have 12 genders. And like I said, I weep every day. And then like he deleted the comment, but in his little like editorial parentheses was like, "Hello, Will Menaker." So Rod's a listener. He's a fan.
We have promoted Rod more than anyone in the
world.
More
than the fucking American conservative has.
The American conservative like clearly had to pick up Rod as some type of result of a lawsuit.
His contract ended like 3 years ago. He just still has the keys to the CMS.
No one has the heart to tell him to leave.
It's like no one goes to that part of the site, leave it.
And no, but in the Weimar Germany article, Rod talks about how him and a friend went to see an art exhibit on like the art of Weimar era Germany, and he said, "My friend, you know, we were walking around, and my friend said to me in the exhibit, 'Rod, you can hear the trains in the background,' and I could just like hear the glee in his voice saying that. I know he's trying to be somber, but think how fucking gross that is."
Yeah.
And Rod is excited by all this shit.
Like, wait, his argument though is that what they brought it on themselves.
Or just that,
because
like
there was a mass, you know, there was a, like the sexual so-called degenerates were sent to camps.
I am kind of curious.
I can't parse this shit.
Yeah.
Wait, what does he say about us?
Oh, he doesn't really say much about us. He just like quotes.
Oh, then who cares?
He just quotes from a reader who's like just talking about how
just says trans people are the reason trans people got killed in the Holocaust.
There's the line from trans to the trains.
Ooh, yo.
That's better than a beer hall putt.
There's no I in trans, but there is in trains, folks.
Ooh, yeah.
Selfish.
I did feel like that when we got a shout out from Rod, that's how I think people thought I felt about The New Yorker. Like, I was actually really excited that we finally made it into Rod's blog.
There's only one publication that shaped me. And it's Rod Dreher's newsletter. It's not The New Yorker.
Yep.
That's
the creme de la creme.
Taught me it was okay to have violent mind spasms.
Well, I refuse to read any of these things until I am featured more heavily. I am protesting. I'm doing a feminist protest. Because I'm lazy and hungover all the time. It's because I'm doing this on feminist grounds. The reason I didn't read any of these things, not even before the episode was being recorded, it's a protest.
Amber, a little birdie, one of my friends in the media, tells me there is a profile of you coming up in the up-and-coming magazine, Da Beek. And Women of the Dirtbag Left profile in Da Beek.
It's like first Da Beek, and then like Bass Pro Fisherman, and then...
This is like the woman who invented, who like discovered DNA. You invented the Dirtbag Left term... definition, and you're not in any of the articles about it.
I'm sorry, I codified our ethos.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're like Marie Curie in that you've discovered something incredibly powerful and potent, but are also going to die of radiation poisoning. Yeah.
You are, in fact...
You're going to die of irony poisoning.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm permaband poster Radium Stomper 88. Dude, Amber is our Leni Riefenstahl. Okay, she doesn't get the valor she deserves, but after we fucking murk ourselves in the bunker after a disastrous live show.
I'll be rehabbed.
Yeah, you're going to Africa.
People can be like, yeah, she took some good photographs.
Yeah, like, what? You like her articles, so what?
Okay, we've already gone way too long. I'm going to save the next thing. I'm just going to give a brief preview for the next show. A little bird gave me a copy of Meghan McArdle's book,
Woo!
The Upside Hell of Down, which is literally an entire book about how failure equals success.
Hell yeah.
Okay?
Hold on a minute. There should be an asterisk next to that. Failure equals success when you are the scion of a fucking wealthy family that can... throw money at every one of your fuck ups. Don't forget that.
Wait, fuck
yeah,
it.
But that's fuck Will,
it.
Right?
Dude, yeah,
so this,
yeah,
this
exactly.
is gonna be this
yeah.
is gonna be this is gonna be our Talmud.
Yeah. Okay. Fuck it, dude. I have skimmed the first 50 or so pages, And I'm here to tell you, they are more abominable than you can possibly imagine. And fuck it. I'm just going to read the first page right now. This is going to be a preview of what you're going to get next time. I'm going to assign everyone a couple chapters. I don't really even care if you read them. We're going to do a full book report on Meghan McArdle next episode. But just as a preview for that, I want to read you the page one preface from Meghan McArdle's The Upside of Down. Refrain comments until I'm over so that the horror can fully sink in. Here it goes. When you tell people you're writing a book, everyone tends to ask the same question. What's it about? And when you tell them you're writing a book about failure, most of them want to know why. For 2 years, I've been giving the same answer. Write what you know. Mostly, they think I'm joking, or at least they're courteous enough to pretend they do. I've got a great husband, a great job, a 100-year-old row house near the U.S. Capitol, and an adorable bull mastiff puppy to chew up its woodwork. I've written for many of the top publications in the English-speaking world, and I got Viking to give me a contract to write this book. My life is, I must admit, pretty great. All these things are true, but this is also true. I am a spectacular failure. I am the Mozart of misfortune, the Paganini of poor luck. I have been laid off from more jobs than most people my age have had. Laid off, not fired, though I've been fired too. At one point, my talent for finding employment at apparently healthy companies that went out of business 4 months later was so amazing that an acquaintance in equity research asked me to let him know if I got an offer from any of the companies he covered so he could short the stock. As you'll see in the chapters to come, the amazing husband and the fabulous job and the gifts of my are the gifts of my previous failure. By extension, so are the house and the dog.
Yo.
Death to Videodrome, long live the new flesh.
I mean, oh yeah, that's God. True, though. That's true. Like, 9 times out of 10, when you see a person who's succeeding, you only see the parking space they just got, not the speed bumps they went over.
Yeah.
Yeah, Meghan McArdle. Somehow she's managed never to be brought up on the show before, despite being like a canker sore, just a perpetual canker sore. Folks, a lot of the shitty pundits we make fun of on this show have two extraordinary skills and are working on building a third. Meghan McArdle is what I like to call a five-tool pundit. She's an extraordinary shithead on so many levels. And like I said, from what I've read in this book so far, it is breathtaking. So she's a five-tool tool. Be on the lookout for next episode. We're doing a deep dive, a la Ross Douthat's Privilege, into Meghan McArdle's other book, Spectacularly Unself-Aware Privilege, the Meghan McArdle story.
Oh, I'm ready to go. Yeah.
Let's do it,
hell
baby.
Yeah.
Till next time, guys.
Yep. Let's do it.
Cheers.
Time was free.